We're discussing the sharp rise in violence against healthcare workers and what can be done about it on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Did you know that a hospital is one of the most hazardous places to work? That leading question is courtesy of OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. It goes on to state that hospitals recorded hundreds of thousands of work-related injuries and illnesses in 2019, and those numbers, they are getting worse. Are you a nurse or on a healthcare team who has experienced violence at work? What can you share? How did your hospital or your clinic respond? 800-642-1234. Bram Sable-Smith is Midwest correspondent for Kaiser Health News and reported on the increase in violence against healthcare workers. Bram, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Well, you know, violence can take many forms. Can you give us some examples of what you're finding, of what healthcare teams are facing at work?
Yeah, well, a few years ago, just before the pandemic, a lot of hospital systems and hospital networks around the country started to define exactly what they meant by workplace violence. And what they landed on is physical and also verbal assault against hospital workers. So examples that we see are, you know, patients spitting at nurses, for example, or yelling, or in some cases actually becoming physically violent to a point that nurses end up patients in their own hospital.
So it is now being defined. What is the extent of this violence? What does the data tell you?
So there's a few places to look for data, and they all seem to be pointing towards a rise in violence. So this is something that hospitals were becoming attuned to before the pandemic. In Missouri, where I live now, unfortunately, I used to live in Wisconsin. I recently moved to St. Louis. In Missouri, the Hospital Association here in about 2018 started tracking violence in the hospital system. They were noting a rise each year, year over year. Now, during the pandemic, that became a little bit complicated to track, the reason being that the people who were in charge of tracking workplace violence were also the people responsible for doing things like getting the protective gear necessary for their hospital workers to stay safe from the virus. So some of the data collection wasn't happening during the pandemic, but other modes were. So a good example is National Nurses United. This is a national nurses union. They do a survey, kind of a pulse type survey of nurses, union and non-union, around the country. And they've been reporting in those, you know, it's about quarterly, they've been reporting in those surveys a steady increase in nurses experiencing workers. Most recently in September, that was about a third of nurses they surveyed. This is a couple thousand nurses. A third of them had experienced violence on the job.
Wow. So those surveys, they continue, but data collection might have stalled a bit in the pandemic. You know, in so many instances, Bram, in society now, we hear the pandemic is to blame. And in this case, is COVID having an effect on the behaviors and these incidents documented in hospitals?
It certainly seems that way. And that's for quite a few reasons. So number one, I talked to some nurses who, I talked to a nurse in California, for example, who she worked in the emergency room and they were threatened with a gun. This was from a visitor for one of the patients who was upset about the COVID protocols at the hospital, upset that they were unable to go back into the treatment area to visit their loved one who's there. Mm. And things got tense, it escalated and turned into this violent act, this violent threat. There's some other reasons that COVID is impacting this. One of them, I talked to a COVID unit nurse in Kansas City who told me just the nature of the COVID infection. This is something that restricts the oxygen level in patients, reduces the oxygen level. And when that happens, they can become agitated and therefore may be more likely to become aggressive themselves, those patients. And then finally, you know, there's so much tension in the society right now over things like masks. COVID itself has become so polarizing that some of that aggression, some of that violence itself is spilling over into the hospital settings. So it really is, on many levels, COVID really is exacerbating a problem that has existed for a while.
I wonder, you know, if you heard with hospitals in COVID having longer wait times in the ER and seeing them having to ration care or even being short-staffed, is this escalating conflict or adding more tension?
I think you're right, Kate. So here's an example, the COVID unit nurse. So a lot of nurses in the COVID units have been asked to take on extra responsibilities during the pandemic. So pre-COVID times, you might have someone from the lab coming up to take blood work. You might have someone like a nurse's aide or something like that, someone like that coming in to feed the patient, for example. You might have cleaning staff coming in to clean a room. But to limit the amount of exposures in a hospital setting, you're having nurses take on those extra responsibilities. So now a nurse will, get into their full protective gear, go into a negative pressure room where the COVID patient's located, and they'll do extra things like these blood draws. They'll feed the patients. They'll clean those rooms. And what that means is that those nurses who are still responsible for the same number of patients they were beforehand, they have less time to do things like de-escalate a situation that's becoming volatile. Absolutely.
Bram Sable-Smith is with us, Midwest correspondent for Kaiser Health News. His recent reporting explored an increase in violence against hospital and healthcare workers. Gathering your experiences as well, your insights at 800-642-1234. Angela is joining us from Baraboo. Angela, hi. What can you say?
Hi. I just wanted to say that, I agree that COVID has brought the violence against healthcare teams more into the light. I do have to say that, it's been something that's been going on for a long time, and it was just kind of something you accepted. You just learned it was the nature of the beast you had signed up for. I've been threatened with guns. I've had patients dig their nails, claw skin off my arms. I've had my arm nearly broken by a patient. And it was just it was never really reported. It was like, oh my gosh, because you're dealing with somebody that is confused and on a lot of medication. I do have to say that as far as COVID, one thing I've noticed is that, and I know it's to stop the spread and to keep people protected, but one thing I have noticed is if you can get one family member involved to help you and allow them to do certain things, it really does help because they know that person. That person will often recognize that family member, even in the midst of, being agitated and hypoxic. And I do wish we could readdress that. But like I said, one thing is that the violence against healthcare workers has been around since we've had healthcare workers, I think. And COVID has really brought it to the forefront. But like I said, initially it was never really reported. You just dealt with it and kept moving.
Angela, thank you for calling in. Thank you for your work and sharing these experiences and insights. Bram, Angela is saying this has been, part of the job. You have heard that as well in your reporting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Angela's hitting on some exact points that we've been hearing. Kate, 73% of non-fatal injuries at the workplace in the United States, this is all injuries at all workplaces in the United States, 73% of them were happening to healthcare workers. And there's every reason to believe, for reasons that Angela noted, there's every reason to believe that assaults against healthcare workers are underreported because there is this kind of prevailing sense that this is part of the job. Now, there's been some pushback, so to speak, against that notion. There's been some push to have hospital workers report this kind of aggression more often, to not necessarily tolerate it as part of the job or as an acceptable part of the job. So there's been pushes to increase the reporting and to clamp down on this. And Angela is absolutely right that this absolutely predates the pandemic.
Kaiser Health News Midwest correspondent Bram Sable-Smith with us on what to make of this rise in violence at hospital and clinic settings. Are you a healthcare worker living this trend? Do you think the pandemic is to blame for patients getting more upset and becoming violent toward their care team? How do you de-escalate? How do you defuse tense situations at your hospital? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Bram Sable-Smith here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the rise in violence in healthcare settings here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the American Nurses Association, the ANA here, one out of four nurses is assaulted on the job. Stories surface every day regarding healthcare workers who face violence, not only from patients and their families, but also fellow coworkers. And the ANA calls it an underreported epidemic that has devastating consequences on the healthcare industry. Do you think there's growing complacency that this violence is part of the job? What legislative action do you want? Has your union stepped up? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Kaiser Health News correspondent Bram Sable-Smith with us for about 9 more minutes. Bram, what are some immediate solutions here that hospitals are considering to protect their healthcare teams?
Well, for some hospitals, the absolute first step in addressing this is to develop a policy, a zero tolerance policy. They're hanging zero tolerance policy posters around the hospital. But there's other steps that hospitals are taking as well. So one of them that nurses especially have been calling for is de-escalation trainings. So these are trainings to help hospital staff de-escalate some of these situations so they don't get out of hand. More steps. I talked to a hospital executive in Branson, Missouri, who they had seen a threefold increase in assaults against their nurses. And what they've done is actually they went out and partnered with a charitable foundation and purchased a bunch of panic buttons that can be worn on hospital workers' ID badges so that no matter where they are, they can push the button and security can come respond to a situation. A lot of hospitals have added security staff, extra security staff. Some, for the first time, some are increasing their security staff presence. And I even talked to one hospital that's brought in dogs, brought in German shepherds to come in and sit in a room and see if that can't de-escalate things as well.
What protection laws or what are healthcare workers lobbying for at the state legislative level? And what are you seeing in by way of new laws passed around the country?
Well, there are a few states that have laws around workplace violence specifically for healthcare workers. Most notably is California. And what that's doing is mandating that that all hospitals will have a workplace violence prevention program on the books. So what you know, especially nurses, I keep talking about nurses because a lot of them make up, they're not the only ones, but they make up a lot of the frontline healthcare workers who are exposed to this kind of violence. What nurses especially will tell you is that just the fact of having an enforceable standard, of having something that they can go to an OSHA type office and say, hey, you know, this hospital needs to start enforcing these workplace safety standards. They say that's really meaningful. And so there's other states that have considered laws like this, but there's also federal legislation, Kate, that would create a federal standard for workplace violence prevention. This is something that's actually passed the U.S. House of Representatives. I know the U.S. Senate has a lot on this plate right now, but this is also one of those things that they could be considering. And this is something that national nurses organizations are really pushing for.
Yeah, I'm wondering, what is the role of OSHA here, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration? I mean, is there federal oversight of these healthcare workplaces that brings a compliance aspect to making these environments, you know, less risky for people just doing their job?
I think the idea is that federal legislation would make that a venue for nurses and other hospital workers to point to. Mm-hmm. Right now, hospitals on their own are identifying this as an issue. You have hospital associations around the country have been identifying this as an issue before the pandemic. And during the pandemic, we've absolutely seen more and more hospitals taking on this responsibility because they see it as a staffing issue. You've heard stories of how hard it is to staff hospitals with nurses right now. There's a nursing shortage. A lot of nurses are able to, you know, potentially make more money if they become travel nurses and go elsewhere. So hospitals are having a hard time retaining that staff. And if they can't keep their workforce safe, that's an issue for staffing as well. So they really see this as a staffing threat to keep themselves operating at full force.
We're talking with Bram Sable-Smith, who is Midwest correspondent for Kaiser Health News, and he's been reporting on the trend in violence in healthcare settings and what hospitals, what states are doing about it at the state level, the federal level. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Aaron is with us from Western Wisconsin. Hi, Aaron. What is your perspective?
Hi, I wanted to share two things. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate this topic. One is that we're also missing the discussion about other healthcare workers, such as the billing departments or patient liaisons, and people of regular contact who aren't nurses receive verbal abuse throughout the day. One statistic we studied was that 80% of healthcare workers have received threats or actual harm when dealing with patients who are often scared or unsure what to do. And then the second thing I wanted to add was that I work for a victim advocacy unit at our local hospital here, and we work with patients and clients throughout the tri-state area, but also our healthcare workers are our people too, whether in our own hospital system or other care facilities. And Wisconsin passed in 2019 a law to make it a felony to attack any healthcare worker, not just emergency or ER workers. But even though that law isn't enforceable as a felony, right now our staff are often dissuaded from reporting, not because of like HIPAA or the fact that it's not a serious issue, because we encourage them to do what they need to in order to feel safe at work, but because their criminal justice system affords a lot of rights to the defendants, and rightfully so. However, because our psychiatric population is struggling, when they get into the criminal justice system, they often have different pleas, which are called maybe like NGI pleas or not guilty by reason of insanity. And our healthcare workers feel like they're left in the dust because they're the victims of violent crime, but these defendants are afforded a lot of rights, you know, and that complicates things, because why would I report if these, you know, wonderful acts our state legislature passed, like felonies against federated healthcare workers, aren't really being stuck in the criminal justice system.
Yeah, and your vantage point here really shows the nuance and the complexities that you bring up. And I'm just wondering here, in your victim advocacy unit, what do you tell victims in these situations? I know you have said, you know, do what you need to do, but what advice do you give?
Well, we give them the options, and we don't give a lot of advice. We give them is, here's what it might look like in the criminal justice system. If you decide to report, here's what the police might ask you if you decide to report. Mm-hmm. You don't have to. And we want to empower them to make sure that they have all the options that they need in order to feel safe at work. Because what we know is when healthcare workers or anybody who is a victim of crime is given options, at least they feel like they can make the choices that is right for them. Mm-hmm. And then we help them through the process all the way up and through and beyond conviction, whether or not that victimhood is seriously affecting them. Some healthcare workers I've talked to have changed careers or retired because of workplace violence in the healthcare system.
Aaron, thank you. Bram, what is coming up for you as you hear about this victim advocacy unit work?
Mm-hmm. Well, Aaron, it raises some good and important points, I think. Number one being that it's not just nurses. You know, I focused on nurses because, you know, they make up a lot of the frontline workers there, but it's not just nurses. Absolutely. Aaron is exactly right. And the other thing is, it's important to note that workplace violence is not just physical. It includes the kind of verbal assault that Aaron was discussing there. That's everything from, you know, being aggressive over the phone with the billing department to, you know, threatening to bring a gun into an ER unit. So those are really, really important points, I think, that Aaron brought up.
The state Senate passed an act providing felonies to perpetrators who assault healthcare workers, and roughly 35 other states have these rules on the books. Do you find that these felony laws are effective at preventing violence?
It's a good question. You know, this whole reporting that we did started out when my colleague Andy Miller in Georgia was listening in on the Georgia Senate Study Committee in September that was looking into this issue as well. And one of the people who had testified there was a nurse who had been violently attacked in her own hospital, ended up in her own ER. Now, her hospital actually declined to press charges against that patient. But she on her own is looking to do that herself. So it provides an avenue. If the hospital doesn't do it itself, it provides an avenue for nurses themselves or healthcare workers or the recipients of these violent attacks to press charges.
We only have a few seconds left, Bram, but what are you watching for as the legislation moves through and also what hospitals are around the country might do as next steps?
Well, you know, this is something that has really kind of united workers and management in hospital settings. So I'm looking to see if there's a push that will come from both fronts to get some kind of legislative action passed, perhaps at the federal level.
Bram, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Bram Sable-Smith, Midwest correspondent for Kaiser Health News, was formerly at WPR as the Mike Simonson Memorial Investigative Reporting Fellow. Ahead this hour, a pair of nursing home administrators reflect on quality of life for their residents and what the COVID vaccinations and boosters mean. Do you have a loved one in a nursing home, or maybe you're a resident? How are you coping in the pandemic? 800-642-1234. News update is next. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.